Kenny and Tyoprin, we are back. Happy Thursday, everybody. Ben Kenny is here. Mr. Zach Tyoprin is here. What's up, buddy?
How you doing?
I mean, it's another Thursday, which means it's another torrential snowstorm.
Torrential?
To me at least, as someone who had to drive across the city to get out here. Yeah, last week, the show was postponed, and people brought up some questions, I think some warranted questions, about whether the show could perform in the weather. This week, here we are. Looking outside. It's snowing hard. The roads were horrible. I had some stories from people at work saying they got hit by other people with their cars.
Really?
Oh, it's chaos out there.
I didn't see any of that in my drive over.
That's because you live right next to here.
It is about a three-minute drive.
Which must be a very good way to live.
It's not a horrible way.
But here we are. I must have angered Mother Nature with something I've said. I wonder what it could have been.
There's a lot. There's a lot out there. I mean, maybe she takes offense to your traffic ticks.
This is the, fifth straight Thursday minus Groundhog Day that there is some inclement weather. We had the one where it was negative 100 and the place was closed. It's been snowing since then. And then here we are. Snow.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm not gonna get into it. I feel like I can perform in any weather. So I feel like I don't want to.
I'm gonna take that out of context.
I don't want to throw you under the bus here. I'm just saying.
It was my fault.
Okay. All right. Cool. All right. So I would have been here no matter what. I feel like I'm Phil Longo's offense. I can compete in any weather. You are a
no. Very, you're the run game.
You are the Ohio State offense. You can only perform when it's windy and it's rainy and it's not great. Yikes, that's you.
No, you are the run game.
Because, with Phil Longo?
Yeah, because it's a short distance. You're able to mostly spend it on the ground in a safe way, not on a high-leverage highway or freeway or whatever you call it. Meanwhile, I'm the passing offense. I'm coming from across the city. I go through a speed limit of 70 to get here. So when the weather gets bad, that's when you could see that be affected. Now, the thing is, the passing offense worked today.
Yeah. See, I feel like someone who grew up in Philadelphia where it snows a bunch, that you've spent a lot of time in weather, so it's not that big of a deal.
It's not that big of a deal.
Okay, so why are we 3 minutes into this and we're still talking about it?
Because you know this show. You know how much I like to talk about the weather.
The weather and traffic.
Plus, I'm looking across the table, and I'm not looking at you. I'm looking outside to see what the weather's like. Now, the sun is still up, which is cool.
Is it? Do we know that for sure?
We're getting there. It seems to be light enough out, but it's snowing. All right, there's weather talk for the day. We're live at Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie after what was a rejuvenating win, Zach. To me, I look back at Tuesday, and a lot of stuff has gone on for the Wisconsin Badgers on the basketball court this season. To me, at least, that was the most fulfilling win of the season. While it came with some angst and some anger externally towards the end, like, that game for me, while I would like them to achieve great things, that game was my Super Bowl. With all the context coming in, with Juwan Howard, with Hunter Dickinson, I know you're laughing because my other Super Bowl was lost, but my college basketball Super Bowl at least was won on Tuesday. You were there. You were in the building. Take us into it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a must win and a can't lose combined. Right,
that one was a must-win. I'll say there were some can't loses before.
Yeah, it was amazing inside the arena, and we can thank Hunter Dickinson and Juwan Howard for that, because they obviously Juwan Howard, what he did last year after the game, everyone was waiting to see him come in, and then Hunter Dickinson on some podcast that he does with another guy who is very, very annoying, in Jordan Bohannon. Actually, throw Marty Mush in there too. All three of them. Could that be the most annoying podcast ever put together? Either
should
way,
I start a Twitter poll?
No. But the Wisconsin scumbags, right? That's what he called them. Then he comes into the arena with a ski mask on, looking to steal a win like an absolute tool.
It's ridiculous.
Just over the top toolness from him, and then his on court behavior. After he makes his first basket, run back down the floor like this with one finger, you know, wagging one finger. And then he makes his second shot, and he's running back down, and he's wagging two fingers. And then he makes a three, and he does something with his crotch and throws the three up in the air. I mean, the guy is just—
No, he did finger guns.
He did. No, like this one?
Yeah.
I don't know how much it was finger guns or not.
Semantics.
It does. It is. Look at you over there. But just the antics over the – just so over-the-top villainy. And I want to say, like, he's playing a role, but I kind of think it's just him. I think that's just who he is.
Can I read to you his second-half stat line?
You can.
So he went into the break firing up the fans, and Michigan led by one at the break, if I'm not mistaken. And Dickinson had a good first half. He was playing pretty well. Him and Crowell were going at it. Dickinson with his patented left jump hook that he will never use his right hand to do. He goes in. He's talking crap to the student section. He comes out for the second half, and his stat line reads, 0-3 from the field, 3 points, and a loss. He came out and he disappeared.
He did.
Like, it wasn't as if he got the ball a lot and he played bad. He never touched the basketball in the second half. So if you're going to come in and you're going to walk into the stadium with a ski mask, you're going to play the biggest villain you could possibly play in an opposing venue after all that happened last year, to come out in the second half and not even be a part of the game was, aside from the win, my single favorite thing to watch.
He gave Wisconsin what they needed. They needed someone to hate. They needed someone to get excited about, and he gave it to them. Like, you think about what had happened 3 days prior, right? At Nebraska, they had blown a 17-point lead, and you could feel it outside of the student section. You could feel it, like, fans were like, I guess we'll go down to the game tonight. And then the student section was into it, and it got the rest of the crowd into it, and it turned into an electric environment, which just hasn't been the case at the Kohl Center very much, but it was. And I have to give credit to the student section, which isn't always great, but they were fantastic on Tuesday night, and it's because of Hunter Dickinson doing what he did and saying what he said.
Which I think my first act as a college basketball coach would be to get my team together, huddle them all up, probably in the preseason, and say, hey, guys, if we're going to go on the road and play somewhere, don't go call the other team scumbags.
Right.
And you call them a lot of things, but don't come out on a podcast you do with two other questionable characters and start calling other teams scumbags and then proceed to play like crap.
Yeah.
Because you look like an idiot.
Like, if he had gone out and had, like, an amazing game in the second half, like, if he had followed up the 9 points and whatever,
I would have respected
like five rebounds, whatever he had in the first half, he comes out and he's got 18 and 12 or 18 and 13, and they, mate, if he does that, they might win. They might have won, but he didn't. And he shrunk. Like, the only time that he was, and look, defensively, he was still solid. Michigan was solid against Wisconsin's post interior offense. I mean, he got the block, and then he was doing the, I don't even know what the hell that was. like, it was like the deserve, like, it's what you get when you call, like, a, what is that, an intentional foul. Like, he was just, like, doing it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again.
In between getting bodied by Carter Gilmore down low.
Yeah, Carter Gilmore gave him all he
which
wanted.
Which was awesome.
Yeah. Like, Carter Gilmore's kind of been on the receiving end of some, I think, fair criticism at time this year, but he was great, especially when Steve wasn't able to be on the floor because of foul trouble, came in and gave them a ton of really good minutes and battled. Like, he didn't back down whatsoever despite being, what, 5 inches shorter than Hunter Dickinson? Yeah, he gave them exactly what they needed.
I also, before we get into other stuff with the game, someone did bring to my attention that it was pretty alarming how, like, not that everybody else wasn't into it, but the difference between how much the student section went after Dickinson compared to others. And my reaction to that was, well, yeah, it's because most of the students have Twitter, right? I'm sure a lot of people that were there hadn't previously seen the clip from the podcast that went crazy on Twitter. So maybe they didn't know. They knew about the Juwan Howard part, and they knew about all of the bad blood entering from that side, but maybe not specifically what Dickinson had said.
Yeah, probably not.
Which I thought was interesting, but, yeah, they brought it. The energy was great. It's hard to keep energy up when your team doesn't score or doesn't make a basket for the last 10 minutes of the game. But credit to them. On defense, enough plays were made. You had the big steal by Chucky Hepburn late in the game. And it was asked to me after the game on Wednesday morning, you know, what do you think of the win? What do we take away from it? There's a college football guy I really like named Josh Pate, who works for 24/7 Sports, and he always talks about games. He brings up something called a padlock stat, where it's a stat that if I had told you that this stat would have happened, you could tell me who won immediately. If I say, okay, the Wisconsin football, for instance, you know, Graham Mertz throws for 250 yards and doesn't turn it over last year or the year before, you probably say, oh, Wisconsin had a really big day. This one, to me at least, the padlock staff from this game, the Badgers 14 of 18 from the line. They had finally an okay showing at the line, and that was the difference. It was the only way they scored down the stretch of the game. And previous times, we had seen them lose games like this literally because they missed those free throws.
Yeah. There have been games this year where they've shot it well at the free throw line and still lost, but more often than not, when they're losing games, especially getting blown out in games, probably not shooting it too well. But it also helps when a guy takes 10 of those, when a certain guy takes 10 of those 18 free throws, and his name is Connor Asijan, and he is a money shooter from the free throw line. 9 for 10 from the free throw line, which was fantastic. It was just an overall great performance from him offensively, scored in so many different ways that we hadn't necessarily seen for a large part of this year. But the ability to put him on the free throw line, and even Chucky was giving the ball up to him. After Chucky's steal, he didn't hold on to the ball. Like, I think in most cases, most times, he probably hangs on to it, and he's the one going to the free throw line. Give back to Chuck, or you give back to Connor. And you got your best free throw line, or best free throw shooter at the line, and he delivered for him.
I honestly thought that in some ways Wisconsin was running circles around Michigan, what seemed like schematically.
Especially
like
early.
They got open looks all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. For a bunch of players, the difference was you had a lot of those shots were just missed. And it sounds like an oversimplification again, but if I go through Wisconsin's box score and I say Steven Crowell, 5 of 15 from the floor, Tyler Wall, 2 of 11 from the floor, Chucky Hepburn, 1 of 9. Now, a lot of those were jump shots, but mainly Wall and Crowell, if they go 7 of 26 from the floor, you're probably assuming Wisconsin lost.
Is that your padlock stat?
No. No, it's a stat to bring context to the fact that it's ridiculous they won without scoring a bucket for the last 10 minutes, but so many of those looks, I thought, like, they had the looks. They just didn't make them, I mean, right? Why I always bring up when everyone talks about guard, right? At some point, you just need the guys to make the baskets.
Oh. The hilarious – I mean, it wasn't funny, but it was funny to me internally. I was laughing. Asked Greg Gard about the 10:45, right? And he said, the first thing we're going to do on Thursday, because we're off tomorrow, is a layup line. And he wanted to go off on it. Like, you could tell he wanted to go off on it further. And he caught himself. And he's like, but they picked it up at the other end. And they did this and they did that. And then, he was kind of talking about some of the misses. Connor had a couple of wide open misses from three. One right in front of the bench, one on the opposite end or one opposite side, where I take that shot every time. And Chucky had a couple of open looks. And he's a high 40s, or has been for much of the year, high 40% three-point shooter. Tyler Wall, just lay the ball in. It's an easy layup. That is a layup line drill. But he didn't go off. He mentioned those things, and then he talked about, them being able to figure things out at the other end. And I guess, I kind of found it funny internally, I know, because you have to be frustrated with that. Like, you have to be frustrated with the idea that you are getting all these open shots, all the offense is working.
Because there's nothing he could do.
Right.
He's doing what he has to.
You can't yell guys into making shots. He's always said that. But it has to be frustrating a little bit for him to be there. Like, these are all shots that we hit all the time, that we hit throughout the entire game, and then all of a sudden you can't make a shot, you can't hit a shot. There's nothing you can do about it if you're him. Like, it's one thing if those are three-point shots, but a lot of them around the rim, the Tyler Wall layup, like, that has to be a 10-for-10 type of thing. You have to hit that every single time. Every single time. There hasn't been – I mean, I don't know off the top of my head exactly what the number was around the rim, but it wasn't good. It was really, really bad. It was worse in the first half than in the second half, but it was bad all around.
Yeah.
And that's a continuation of what it is. They're a horrible two-point shooting team.
Which is weird because Tyler Wall was always the guy that made those shots and made them look easier than they probably were.
He's 10% lower this year from two.
Which is one of the biggest differences on the team. And I don't want to turn this into a larger picture Greg Gard thing, but I thought, like, schematically, again, they had open looks all the time. The difference was for 10 minutes of the game, they just stopped making them. And there's a point where there's nothing he could do as a coach to make Tyler Wall not miss that layup.
No, because you don't want to be negative about it. if you get negative about it, then it gets into their head and they start thinking about it even more. And I think Tyler Wall is all up in his head at this point. I mean, whether it's at the free throw line or whether it's, you know, being able to finish. He had a couple – I mean, the thing is, we saw it a couple times where he's able to finish inside. Like, the two shots that he did make were not easy baskets. They were contested, and he was able to make them. But it's just not consistent enough with him, and that just doesn't make any sense because he was so, so consistent last year. You could count on him all the time, and when he was not in the lineup, you could tell. And they missed him, obviously, when he wasn't in the lineup because he does other things than just offense. And, you know, he's – a good rebounder and obviously a very solid a really good defender, but the lack of offense from him. I mean, he's gone from the leading scorer, I think, down to like the fourth leading scorer on this team since coming off that injury. Meanwhile, Connor Asijan may end up leading this team in scoring. I do not know the last time a true freshman led Wisconsin in scoring. It's been a long time, I'm guessing.
And the volume for him, at least, is usually far below Chucky's.
Yes.
Good handshake line.
It was.
At the end of the game, it was simple, it was short, it was firm.
That he
couple shakes there.
Kind of surprised he didn't put the left hand in the pocket just to make sure.
Yeah, yeah. Because I could tell. It feels like Greg Gard's a big shake the hand with the right hand and put the left hand on the opposing right arm as a good game, which he has done. And I guess he also did with Juwan Howard. It was more of a to the right bicep, which I guess impeded all the progress people talked about. But it was a clean handshake line. It was tense, we'll say, for that moment, and then they moved on.
Yeah.
So I was somewhat impressed. I would have liked Gard to go for more of an embrace to rub it in, but he didn't. And, it's been a tough season. Meanwhile, Northwestern is out here toppling Giants and beating Purdue and Indiana. Northwestern's in second place in the Big Ten, which is crazy. 10-5. The Badgers now sit, they are 7-8. They are one game back of Rutgers and Michigan, one and a half back of a bunch of teams with a bunch of games left. So, again, if they could string some stuff together and play a full game, the same play that got them up 10 on Michigan, if they could do that for a game, they could, in theory, beat almost anybody. Haven't seen it.
Do you know, I just saw, as we're watching here at Monk's on the TVs, and there's a lot of them, and you can watch a ton of sports here. Buck's going to be closing out the first half of the season coming up here at 6:30 down in Chicago. But just saw on the TV, what do you think the odds of the Badgers winning the national championship are right now? They just put them up there.
Football or basketball?
Basketball.
Oh, my God. Plus
so no,
plus 100,000.
So it was Kentucky was – like other bubble teams. Kentucky is 40-1.
Okay.
North Carolina's 40-1.
Wisconsin's 120-1.
250-1.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. It does not seem like a team that has a hot streak in them.
No.
But I hope I'm wrong. A couple real quick unsung heroes. I guess they were partially sung. Kamari McGee.
He got the post-game media scrum.
He got the treatment?
He got to come in.
Oh. He was terrific. Probably the best game he's played.
Easily.
And then again, Carter Gilmore. He needed another big to battle, not even score, just to be that guy, and he was huge. So a big-time win for Wisconsin, one that made me feel better about recent sporting losses I have had, and one that I will carry. Like, they play at Michigan. Who cares? Like,
oh, that's going to be an absolute
disaster. It's going to be a madhouse, yeah. But I needed them to win this game at home. This was the important one, and they did it.
For sure.
To those out there, thank you. And it raises a little bit of excitement, I will say. It reinvigorates me a bit. More for the rest of the year until they lose again.
Again, they've got a three-game homestand here. They've got win number one. Now they get Rutgers on Saturday and then Iowa. And if you can get those two wins, you get to 17. And you're sitting there needing to, with one or two of the last ones to have a good shot of getting in?
Yeah, they're still firmly on the bubble.
I think they're
not dead.
I think Lenardi had them as one of the last four in yesterday.
Also, I will take a parting shot at Michigan. They have a lot of talent.
They do.
They stink.
Jet Howard's a talented player.
They, like, the team collectively, that kid, that the lefty that went for a bunch, Bufkin or whatever, in the second half, they have talent. Like, how can their coach not get them to play well? That's a good question. That's one maybe people in Michigan are wondering about. But we'll talk Badgers as we move along. There's a lot more to get to today. That's Zach Heilprin. I'm Ben Kenny. We are live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. Zach talked about the TVs. Tiger Woods is playing golf. It's on television, and we're watching it. You have that. You have pregame shows galore, talk shows galore, still talking about the Super Bowl, which pains me But for those that want more analysis, you can come to Monks and Sun Prairie to watch it. This place is great. Drink specials, have food specials as well. The food's great. So find a Monks location near you. Come by the one in Sun Prairie. Coming up next, Luke Fickell lost a key assistant this week. He has found a replacement. We will tell you who. We'll tell you what it means when we return. It is Kenny and Heilprin.
This is Kenny and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
All right, we are back. It is Kenny and Heilprin live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. It is still dumping snow for those out there that are driving in it. Probably don't need me to tell you. But
thanks for the heads up.
It's a Thursday. The weather's ridiculous. People are wondering if Phil Longo's offense could work in this weather. And connected to that, Zach.
Well, the run game could.
Right, which means you can easily get here. So Luke Fickell's lost a key assistant. You want to debate the word key, he lost an assistant. Gino Guidoglie.
Guidoglie.
Again, somebody who I have probably butchered his name. And now don't need to learn how to truly say it.
As I said, that's perhaps the best part of this.
He came over from Cincinnati. He was the tight ends coach and passing game coordinator.
He was not.
Co-offensive coordinator.
Oh, here?
Yeah, here.
Here. He was the passing game coordinator and the tight ends coach.
And he has taken the quarterback's coach job at Notre Dame.
Yeah. It was always a weird fit as a tight ends coach at Wisconsin because he had never coached the position before. He was Cincinnati's offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach for the last 4 years. He was the play caller last year. He coached the running backs his first year with Luke Fickell, but it was kind of like a Paul Chryst putting not necessarily Al Johnson.
Well,
you know,
I want to bring up Paul Chryst in a second.
Yeah, but either way, so yes, it was questionable. It wasn't questionable. You kind of knew what he was doing. They like him as a recruiter and that's going to be, I think, that's the hit, right? But otherwise.
Well, he was a guy that tried to get the Cincinnati coaching job when Fickell left. They end up hiring Scott Satterfield from Louisville. He tried to get that job. He seemed overqualified to come in as an assistant like that as opposed to being the offensive coordinator under Fickell had he been here. So he did feel like a guy that would have gone to a better job somewhere else. I think quarterback's coach at Notre Dame seems to make sense, I guess, with what they're doing there. But, yes, the big he was known as a master recruiter of the Midwest, which is something that Wisconsin needs and will prove to be valuable. Two tight ends in the class of 2024 had committed with Grant Steck and Booker, the in-state guy. Now, I saw Steck tweet out today that another recruit had tweeted a top 20, top 15 list, and he commented with Wisconsin. So it appears to be that they're not following him, that he was not the reason that they came to Wisconsin, though I'm sure he had a big part in recruiting them or would have had a big part elsewhere.
I've read that Steck, that Notre Dame is still very heavily after Steck at this point.
All right, well, I guess we're going to cross our fingers and hope he stays. But I guess the larger thing here is that clearly they haven't played a game. We're still in the honeymoon phase of all the Fickell stuff. Spring ball starting in a month, and the staff is already getting poached. We thought this would be something that would happen after the season.
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough because he thought you had the exact staff that he wanted, and obviously it was going to give him a great opportunity because he lamented the lack of Wisconsin connections, right? Like on his staff, something he had total control over. But he lamented the lack of Wisconsin players or Wisconsin connection on his staff. And so he had the opportunity to do that now that, obviously, Gino Guidoglie is going elsewhere. And what did he do? What did he end up doing instead?
So he has hired former Cincinnati tight ends coach Nate Letton to come on the staff and take the job. Nate Letton, for 2 years before being the tight ends coach at Cincinnati, was a graduate assistant.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been a quality control coach at Wisconsin under Fickell.
At Cincinnati.
Oh, I thought he was already hired here.
Sorry.
He was already at Wisconsin, but he was a quality control guy. Now he is the tight ends coach. So I mean, on the surface, on face value, not as impressive as Gudogli, clearly. Not as much of a track record. I guess the bigger point here to make is that obviously this is a circumstance that you didn't expect to happen, and it's happening early. Yet, this will be something that comes up instantly. There will be a lot of guys, if you have success, and if especially if you're a flashy place that has success, right? Like the classic Wisconsin, not many of their assistants were on their way out all the time. But if you're more like if you're in a Phil Longo offense, people want a part of that. That's college football. What is going to craft Fickell's regime, I think, is not the staff he is now. It's once those guys leave, who do you bring in?
Yeah.
So this is a way – it's not Longo. It's not Tressel. It's not one of the top guys. But still, I think this is the first indication that this is going to happen.
It is. And it's also hilarious because it's happened before, too. Wisconsin in – or Gary Anderson, when he took the job in 2013, he hired Jay Boulware as his tight ends coach. And even before spring ball, it must have been – I think it was in February. I was not covering the team yet. I didn't start covering the team until July of that year. But Jay Boulware took the job at Oklahoma, and Gary Anderson said, "I brought the wrong people here. I brought the wrong guy here." Like, he went out and said that about Jay Boulware. He goes, "I didn't know he was this type of guy," and he was really, really upset about it. I kind of feel like Luke Fickell may have known that because of his relationship with Geno, knowing him for the last five seasons and coaching under him, or having him under him for the last five seasons, kind of knew that maybe this wasn't going to be a long-term thing, where it was kind of be like, if something else pops up, especially Marcus Freeman, who he has a relationship with, and you have the quarterback's job open with Tommy Reese going down to LSU, that it would make sense to go and get back into a role that you're more comfortable with than perhaps a tight ends coach.
Right, and Geno came over late. As Fickell was hiring the staff, he was trying to get the Cincinnati job. Or I'm sure there were other things that he was looking for.
Yes. Yes.
So he came over to Wisconsin as kind of a late guy. I didn't expect him to follow.
Like,
after
either.
The Longo thing, right, I thought he would go be an OC somewhere else.
Right.
So I was thrilled when they got him, because he seemed to be a guy that was qualified to be an offensive coordinator. So, yeah, it does seem like it's someone that he should have had a backup plan for if something did come up.
And maybe he did.
It still is late. Maybe he did.
Maybe Lutton was always the guy, right? Maybe what's his name? Nate
Lutton.
Lutton. Yeah, sorry. I was thinking it was Nate Lutton. It's not. It's Nate Lutton. I think he was he was their tight ends coach last year. You had him on staff, so he had the ability to just be your guy that could step right in if there was something there. So maybe that was the thought all along.
What the hope is, at least for me, Wisconsin has not had coaches poached for a little while, for obvious reasons. They weren't having the highest level of success, right, under Crist. One of the downfalls of that era was, going into last season, was the offensive staff that he hired. Because you had all the guys leave. You had he moved some pieces around, we'll say. He didn't go through and fire everybody, but he had to reshape the staff, and the new staff didn't work. And clearly you saw the results of when that happens, what will happen to you as a head coach. I guess my hope is that this was the true backup plan, and this isn't just we need to fill that role on the staff. And, I mean, I'm thankful it's not a Bill Sheridan moment where they're midway through their past spring ball. They're going into summer conditioning,
yep,
and then that happens. But
yeah, no, it is. But you just had the opportunity for him to potentially, like he literally said, this isn't, and maybe that's, he didn't think that there was going to be an opening, right, so quickly, and that he was going to have to, people are going to be like, hey, it's all right, well, you said, you know, you wanted a Wisconsin guy, you want some Wisconsin connections on this coaching staff.
Wait, does Nate Lutton have Wisconsin connections?
No.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, he doesn't. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I thought I was missing.
No, that's what I'm saying.
He's
like,
none.
That's why a lot of people are like, all right, well.
Well, so this brings me perfectly to what I was thinking about when this first happened. There are several former Wisconsin tight ends coaches that are currently out of work, and that it would be hilarious for content if they came back.
Several of them, yeah.
One name? Paul Crist.
Paul Crist, former tight ends coach, 2002 at Wisconsin.
Another name, Chris Herring.
Chris Herring, former tight ends coach, 2022.
And special teams, obviously. Maybe he could come in and do both. And
yeah,
again, he was the guy who orchestrated maybe the fake punt in the guaranteed rate bowl. Well, maybe.
Well, perhaps the greatest special teams performance in at least the last 3 years.
And then one of them does have a job. It's Joe Rudolph.
Yep, the tight ends coach from 2007 through 2011, I think. So, yeah.
Tight I think so. And then Mickey Turner, obviously.
And Mickey Turner.
So, there you go.
And Mickey Turner obviously got a new job. He's the wide receivers coach now, I believe, at Illinois State.
Yes. So when I tweeted that, everybody brought up, oh, he's coaching at Illinois State.
You don't think he's going to leave Illinois State for Wisconsin?
And I tried to slyly tell people that, no, I'm talking about Paul Christ.
Yeah.
Who, for obvious, it was a joke. And for obvious reasons, he is out of work at the moment, living the buyout life, which, again, is a pretty good way to live.
The buyout life.
If you consider it, for however long he decides to do it.
Do you think he's ever
coaching
again? You
got the big severance package?
Do you think he's ever coaching again?
I do.
I don't.
I do. At some point, at some level. Let's say in theory.
Oh, at some level.
Jim Leonard gets a job. He wants a tight ends coach to come in and be a culture guy and hang out and do a little recruiting.
Do a little recruiting. Do you know what is involved in being a college head, college coach these days?
Well, maybe Leonard takes a job.
It ain't being doing a little recruiting.
Well, Paul Christ.
It's being on the road a ton.
Okay, well, then he could be culture guy.
No, he can be offensive analyst.
Okay, sure.
He can sit in the room and watch film all day.
Sure, or he can do that in the pros. I think he will take a coaching position somewhere. But maybe not.
I don't think it'll be
a head coach.
I don't think it'll be a coaching position per se.
On a coaching staff.
Yes.
Okay. I could see that happening.
I could see that.
Do you think it happens at Wisconsin?
No. Absolutely not.
So
anything that will involve him having to do recruiting ain't happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that makes sense. All right. That's Zach Heilprin.
Sorry, I didn't mean to jump on you there. But
no.
It's just, yeah.
That
was never anything something he enjoyed. Even when he was the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach under Bielma, he was like the national quarterback recruiter. He didn't have an area. He was just go find quarterbacks.
Well, even the national quarterback recruiter at Wisconsin these days has a much bigger job than the guy previously, probably.
Yes.
He's out there trying to catch more fish.
Well, and he caught a few. He's caught quite a few.
Yep. All right. That's Zach Heilprin. I'm Ben Kenny. We're live at Monks and Sun Prairie. Come on by. Drink specials going on. Food is tremendous. Find a Monks near you. Come by to the one in Sun Prairie. When we come back, Zach, a national college football guy, had high praise for the Wisconsin program earlier today. We'll tell you who, we'll tell you what it was, and react when we return. It's Kenny and Heilprin. We'll be right back.
This is Kenny and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
All right, welcome back. Kenny and Heilprin, live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. Podcast of the show will be up after conclusion. We'll be back on Tuesday night, as we always are. A lot of exciting stuff to come next week, Zach. I want to get into the biggest questions for spring practice entering.
Well, we finally got a spring practice schedule.
We did.
Well, I shouldn't say a schedule. We know what days they're going to be on. We know what days they're going to start.
And the launch is what they're calling it, is on April 22nd.
It is.
If I'm not mistaken.
It is. That's a Saturday. Essentially what they're – yeah, the launch slash what normal people would call the spring game, but it's not going to be a game. But, yeah, the 15 practices get started on the 24th or 25th.
Yeah. So
can't believe I did that.
A lot of intrigue. I can't wait for it to begin. I wanted to get to this, though. I was surfing Twitter today, and I saw a video. It was of a 24/7 sports show talking
25th,
about
thank you.
Bold predictions for the season.
Yeah.
Now, Brad Crawford is one of their national recruiting guys. You see a lot of his writing work in regards to both recruiting and the season as a whole. And his bold prediction was that Wisconsin is, quote, the most underrated team in the country. Where we stand today, obviously, with not any rankings out, but that they will be slept on more than anybody else. He went on to say they will be this year's Tennessee. So, for reference, for context.
So the last year's one of the best offenses, one of the worst defenses.
Last year's Tennessee, they went 11-2. including an Orange Bowl win. They had a huge win against Alabama,
yep.
and they obviously got crushed against Georgia, but so did a lot of teams. They had a Heisman-type quarterback, an electric offense, and I guess a reinvigorating offense for Tennessee. They've always been able to score, but what they did offensively was awesome and is kind of new under Josh Heupel. Their defense was not as good and got exposed in some certain moments.
It's been nice.
But let's take away the context of the defense sucking. Is Wisconsin the most underrated team in the country right now, Zach?
We don't even know what the team's going to look like. It's hard for me to sit here and say, just based on everything they've done, I guess you could say yes. I mean, what's underrated? They're, in your boys' S&P, they're 25th. Is that underrated?
So here's the thing. It depends on which rankings you go by.
Okay.
It depends which Bible you study, if you will. So when the
I only know of one Bible, Ben.
When the preseason rankings come out, Zach, I can almost guarantee they will be undervalued. They're not going to be in the top 25. I don't think they will be in the top 25.
They were in some people's too early top 25s.
We'll okay. See.
It could be. Here's the thing. We don't even know what the team is going to look like after spring. Guys could come, guys could go.
You're right. And I'm still going to make this point that for years and years, Classic Wisconsin has always been a preseason number 18 or 12 team when we here kind of have known that there have been some questions.
Yeah.
When you entered the 2022 season after losing the whole defense, they were the number 18 team. When you went into 2020, I believe they were also ranked coming off of 2019, losing, I mean, pretty much all of the best players on both sides of the ball. Yet this
better
year,
quarterback, obviously, but
they lost their quarterback entering 2020, and then he was not as good as the previous one.
I mean, the guy threw five touchdowns in the first game of the season.
Yeah, and then it didn't go well after that. So I guess where we stand today, I want to almost guarantee that they'll be underrated in the preseason poll because so much of the preseason poll to me is always built on what happens last year.
But
and
yeah.
Last year the team wasn't very good.
See,
and all of the metrics like SP+, this is why I say like it depends if you look at that more for rankings, that will take that into account at least a little bit. And they are number 25. They're a fringe, you know, maybe top 20 team entering the year if things are perfect from now until then, yet I don't think in the AP poll they'll be ranked. People will be caught up on what TCU did last year, but TCU loses everybody.
I don't think people are going to be caught up on what TCU did last year.
Well, they're going to be a top 12 team. I mean, there will be many teams that had great years last year that lose a good amount of that team and will be overinflated because of that. Think about 2018 Wisconsin.
So we need to stop talking about old college football here. This is new college football. This is teams essentially turning over on a regular yearly basis. I don't think these top 25 polls come August are going to be related to what happened last year. Some of it is.
They always are.
What did I just say?
That it's different.
This is a new college football where the rosters change over every single year. We saw that last year with how different things could look with all the transfers. TCU's brought in a ton of transfers. So they were not properly rated before the game or before the year. Then they also won a bunch of close games. You can never really judge that. But what I'm saying is I think people are going to start realizing that just basing stuff on last year, probably not the smartest thing to do. Look at the roster. Look who came in. Look who left. Both
look
transfers,
at the schedule.
Transfers and otherwise. Look at the schedule. Look at all that stuff before you sit there and say, oh, yep, I'm making my poll out. Because this is new college football. This is not we're going to return – you know, 80% of the roster from last year, 85% of the roster from last year. That's just not going to be the case, and it doesn't matter what school you are. You bring in, like, Michigan lost a bunch of guys. They also brought in a bunch of guys. Like, that's just the way it is. So, will Wisconsin be ranked? I don't know. But I don't think it's going to be based on what happened last year.
Okay. I guess I'm a little more pessimistic when it comes to the AP poll because, let's be honest, like, most of those writers know their schools like the back of their hand. And for a lot of them, they aren't able to catch up as much on other conferences. Like, it's hard to expect someone who covers Oregon to know the ins and outs of Florida's depth chart.
Perhaps, but it's also apparent that people in Oregon have a better grasp of what's happening at Washington and Oregon State and all those other places than perhaps an AP poll voter down in Florida or perhaps Ben Kenny in Wisconsin. Like, they're around it on a much more regular basis to understand what's going on up there, and that's kind of the point of it. you're going to vote what you know up there. People in Florida are going to vote what they know down there. People in Wisconsin and the Midwest are going to vote what they know around here. And it all works out. That's just the way it is. That's why you have voters from all over the country.
So do you think Wisconsin can be this year's Tennessee?
No.
You don't?
No.
I think, and this is blind projection, there's
Tennessee
a chance.
Tennessee was number one at one point, weren't they? Not number one, excuse me. Like number two or number three in the country.
They were in the top four.
After they beat Alabama.
But it's hard, like midseason, the midseason rankings are never what they are to end the year. But yes.
Iowa wishes they were.
Right. Like the path is there.
Number
if
two,
we're being
Iowa
honest,
Hawkeyes.
All that includes is going 10-2 and then winning a bowl game.
All that includes is doing that. Paul Chryst couldn't do that the last 3 years.
I understand that. But the path, again, in the West is still there. I'm not going to say they're going to do it. I'm just going to say there's a chance that.
Oh, there's, of course, a chance.
There's a chance that what this guy is saying is true. There's
sure.
a chance that they could enter the season unranked and then end up finishing as a top 15 team, top
sure.
12 team.
Sure.
That's
yeah.
all I'm saying.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Because, again, the schedule, when you look through it, is more manageable than it will be going forward.
We don't know that, but yeah.
I think that that will happen given the better teams joining the conference.
We literally don't know what the schedule is going to look like.
All right. I like
that type of stuff, you don't like that?
It's not significant.
But it is. Everyone saying that is like Wisconsin's not going to get to play Indiana, Maryland, and Rutgers all the time.
No, but just because
they're not in the West, because they don't get to play Purdue or Illinois or Northwestern every year, that doesn't mean they're not going to also. They're going to be adding some other teams in that aren't very good from the other division, too, are they not?
Probably. I don't know, but they're adding two schools from outside the conference to the conference that are better than many of the programs that are already in the Big Ten.
UCLA is overrated.
They had a good season last year, but whatever. That's aside from the point. The point is I think Wisconsin's schedule this year will be easier than it will be going forward.
I think that's probably safe to say just based on the fact that they don't play Michigan, don't play Penn State.
Yeah.
And they get Ohio State at home.
So the path is there to what this guy is saying. I guess my bigger takeaway
from... Did he mention the schedule?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. My bigger takeaway from all of it is that I do think, like there's a lot of hype around Luke Fickell. There's a lot of hype around Longo. But I think team-wise, they could be slept on in the grand scheme of the Big Ten. The West still exists. And if they can win the West, then they just have to win one game of the Big Ten title. When national people get together in August or in July and talk about favorites for the Big Ten and everyone goes, oh, what's your best bet in the Big Ten to win it? I think there will be three teams mentioned, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. And the winner of the East from those three, they'll just be assumed as the shoe-in. Because you look recently, those Big Ten title games between Purdue and Michigan and Iowa and Michigan were beatdowns. But that's like those Purdue and Iowa teams weren't very good.
The West is number one.
And sometimes it's been close, but recently it's been complete beatdowns.
It hasn't been close in a while.
It was close in 2019.
It was not. It was a 15. It was a 14.
Northwestern kept it close against Ohio State.
In 2020?
Yep.
They ended up winning by how many?
I don't know, but it was
close
until the fourth quarter.
True. Yet Tennessee was not voted as the were they thought of as the preseason pick in the East?
No.
Okay. Because Wisconsin could be the preseason pick in the West. I can almost guarantee you that.
Yeah, I guess with change comes the return to when we were at Big Ten Media Days and we were to ask people who do you think wins, everyone says, oh, yeah, it'll probably be Wisconsin. Just because they have questions, but it'll probably be Wisconsin. Tennessee was not because they're in the division with Georgia, and Georgia was the obviously returning national champion. So, yeah, I could see that. And in the SEC, when you get to the – even if you're the East champion, you still have Bama on the other side. Or it turned
right.
out to be LSU.
Yeah.
But it's not as if you are Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State. You get to the title game, and it's Rutgers – or Purdue, excuse me. So, I don't know. Like, the path for all of that is there. I do think people will – the bigger point I wanted to make is people will talk about Wisconsin in the light of, you know, their new changes are exciting. They're an exciting team. Maybe there's potential. But there will be a realistic shot. I don't think they'll talk about the on-the-field part. I think there will be a realistic shot that they are in the Big Ten title game and could be pushing another team close.
It always has to be remembered, I think, that the talent on this team was always thought that 2023 was going to be the year that they were going to make a push, another push for a ton of success, both on both sides of the ball. And we haven't necessarily seen all that talent play at the level that maybe some of us thought it was going to, but it's still there. And I think you look up and down the roster, they have a chance to be much more talented at nearly every spot than they were last year, outside of maybe nose tackle and maybe outside linebacker.
So I'll close with this. I think Wisconsin could be next year's Tennessee in that a 10-2 and a good bowl win and a lot of momentum. I do not think they will be next year's TCU, who shocks the world and wins every game except for a close title game loss and then goes to the national title game, right? Like the Tennessee thing is attainable. The TCU thing is attainable, but the Tennessee thing lands in the more realistic realm.
Okay.
That's what I'll say. In terms of what could Wisconsin be, I would say a spectacular season is what Tennessee did. What TCU did is flat out remarkable.
A ton of people would take what Tennessee did.
Oh, easily. Going into year two, definitely. All right. We're live at Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. It's Kenny and Heilprin. We will close it up coming up next.
This is Kenny and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
All right. We are back. Kenny and Heilprin closing it out. The Wisconsin Badger basketball team, Zach, is back in action coming up on... I should have pulled it up, but I must admit I didn't. When are the Badgers back in action? When will my heart be broken again?
It will come on Saturday as Rutgers comes to town. Rutgers, since going into the top 25, I think they were number 24, they've lost three straight. And dropped to just a game above Wisconsin. I believe them and Michigan are tied. One game ahead of Wisconsin in Big Ten play. I believe they're 8-7, Wisconsin 7-8, and then they get, obviously, Iowa next week.
So
before going to Michigan.
Yep, the path is there. And then more coordinator talk as we go forward through our assistant talk as we go into next week.
Yep, I don't know the names of the assistants they're going to be talking next Tuesday.
Probably
yet.
Won't be Gino Guidugli.
It would have been amazing if he would have talked on Tuesday and then left on Thursday. Two other guys, I guess.
All right.
It could be Nate Letton. We'll see.
There will be stuff to come from that. We will also talk next week the biggest questions entering spring ball, broad sweeping questions, and might make a list, which we'll, I guess, try to answer at the end of it. It'll be a fun thing to revisit. And then who knows? I mean, based on what's happened this year, there's going to be torrential snow next Thursday. We'll come back here, and something groundbreaking will have broken. Whether it's college football related. Like, this is the time last year we had USC and UCLA join the Big Ten.
It was.
So I've kind of learned, at least with football, not to ever expect things will stay as they are.
Was it? Because I feel like we were doing the show, and we weren't doing the show yet at this point.
Oh, it might have been March.
Yeah. Either way, it's relevant. Sorry. My bad. I'm looking forward to next week. I will say this. We don't, but myself and Jesse Temple have just hit the exact right spot when it comes to the camp and doing recordings right before something breaks. So yesterday's show. I posted it, and like an hour later, the news about.
So when are you recording next?
Next Wednesday.
Okay, so next Wednesday or Thursday morning.
Yeah.
Look out for some
big news.
Some breaking news.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for us. Until then. Everybody enjoy your weekend. Hopefully the Badgers get a win. Hopefully we have a tournament run, at least what seems to be one to talk about. We'll be back Tuesday at 6 o'clock. See ya.